Good morning, good morning. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou. It's Thursday, February 19th. Producer Robbie West will be sitting in for John Kiriakou, who I guess the best way to describe his status is he's in taxi mode on his way from the airport to his home studio, where he will be joining us with the program already in progress. Robbie, thank you very much for sitting in for John this morning.
Of course. My voice will hold out, but I think we'll be okay.
All right. Maybe sit a little closer to the mic because you're a little soft. Okay. So obviously another slow news day here to talk with obviously just a few things we're going to have to stretch out the bubble gum in order to talk about. Totally kidding here. Just as this morning the news broke that the man formerly known as Prince Andrew, whom the British authorities are identifying as a man in his mid-60s, has been arrested at his home in Great Britain. This is, of course, former Prince Andrew Mount, also now known because he's been deprinced, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. He's been arrested on suspicion of passing classified UK documents on to Jeffrey Epstein. We'll talk about all the political and legal ramifications there. We will also be talking about Mark Zuckerberg's testimony before the Los Angeles Supreme Court, a place that I'm a little familiar with, in this first ever trial of a major tech company on the question of whether the product is addictive or toxic. Let's all hold our breaths about how that's going to turn out. Donald Trump is basically facing some opposition from some unlikely sources, including Trumpies and people who are pro-deportation for the construction of a series of 16 ICE gulags that will have at least 100,000 beds meant to process people. And I have some questions about that that don't really even have much to do with ICE, but have more to do with political dissidents here in the United States. There's a billionaire tax proposal in the state of California. Bernie Sanders is out campaigning for that. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California and probable 2028 presidential candidate, is very much against that. We'll talk about whether that's viable or not. The former president of South Korea, the guy who briefly declared martial law back in 2024 and who was subsequently arrested, has been sentenced to life in prison. And finally, last but not least, France is still reeling in the aftermath of the death of its own Charlie Kirk, Quentin Durant. Also some interesting sidelines to that story, because there's a lot of AI like glop that has basically affixed itself to this story, beginning with the images of him that ended up on t-shirts and stuff. They weren't even of him because there was no public photos. His family ended up releasing a photo. I think they should have stuck with the fake photos because he was a better looking kid. The fake photos were better looking than the real ones. Not that he was fugly or anything. But anyway, we'll talk about that. He was a guy who was a right winger beaten to death by left wingers. And we have, of course, always space for your questions and comments in the Rumble feed and in the live chat. Since it's just Robbie and I until John gets here, I beg your patience to get to your questions, because Robbie has to talk as well as look at the comments as I do, which is a little more involved and complicated than usual when we have the three of us here. So, all right, with that, Robbie, I always give John the choice of what to talk about first. I'm going to give you a choice of three. You want to talk about ICE gulags, the pervy prince, or Quentin Durant?
The gulags.
Let's do gulags. All right.
Gulags for 100.
All right. Gulags it is. So late last year, a bipartisan group of congressmen, including in the Senate, including some Democrats, approved $38 billion for ICE. And that's a massive package that plans to turn ICE into, and already is turning it into, one of the largest armed forces on the planet. It's ultimately going to be bigger than the People's Army, the People's Liberation Army in China, and the former Red Army in Russia. It's just impossibly big. Let me just ask you the question that I was kind of like saving, because I was working on a cartoon about this. And so Before we get into the immigration aspect and the community NIMBYism related to this, what do you think about the following statistics, Robbie? So there's going to be 100,000 beds, right? I looked up how many criminal illegal aliens there are in the United States. Now, if we take an expansive, sweeping view of everybody who's ever committed any offense whatsoever, including traffic violations, you're at about 500,000. So if you sweep up every green card holder, you know, person who you could come up with an excuse to say this person violated a law, a regulation, cheated on their taxes, killed someone, raped someone, pedophiled someone, whatever, anything, you get about 500,000 people. The average detention time, according to ICE, for a deportee is 60 days, 2 months. Now, if you do a back of the envelope on that, you get to about 9 months to get rid of all the baddies. So, Robbie, what happens when all the baddies are gone? What's going to happen to all those 100,000 beds? Are we just going to shut them down and turn them into Motel 6s? Or are they going to feed into my terror dream that they're going to come after people like me? Or, you know, what are they going to be for? Because even if you say you're going to throw out all the illegal immigrants, including those who have not committed any crimes, you're going to burn through all of those beds in short order. And then what?
Well, I have no doubt that the Trump administration is going to be benevolent. What they're going to do is that they're going to open all these beds up to be shelters for the mentally ill, the unhoused, the people who are just down and out and just need a second chance. So I think what they're going to do is that they're going to turn them into schools and they're going to make them
community
into wonderful
centers
rehabilitation
for senior
centers.
Citizens.
Of course, because that's what our government does. Our government always reaches out to the lowest members of our society to help them up and help them learn a skill, learn a trade, get back up on their feet.
Job retraining.
Of course. I have no doubt at all that this is what the Trump administration is going to do. They would never
yoga
try,
class.
Yeah, well, perhaps. No, I mean, they would never try to sell these and expand the private prison complex and try and make money off of the misery and self-destruction of the American public population. They would never do that.
No,
our government's not that cynical,
and nor would the government ever, anticipate that there might be civil unrest following, let's say, a suspension of an election, that might require some jailing of, you know, awkward, annoying lefties, liberals, progressives, and so on.
Oh yeah, no,
and maybe some patriotic right wingers too.
Listen, that's going to happen. I mean, listen, the Trump administration, they have got their ear to the beating heart of the American public. They they want to take care of us.
Like a loving mother.
Of course. And by the way, this is pure sarcasm in case it's getting lost in the broken voice here. No, I think what this is going to be a massive overreach by the federal government. It is disgusting. It's shameful. And I really wish that the America only right faction of the Republican Party, like me, and populist lefties could all get together arm in arm and just say one great big giant fuck you to Donald Trump.
Well, I agree with that. But you and I both know that's not going to happen. History shows it. People are just scared, and people don't want to end up warming one of those cells. Look, I'll admit it. If I feel like they're coming, that one of those beds has my name on it or my number on it, I assume is what it would be. I'm hopping on a plane and I'm out. You know, I mean, you know, if they'll let me out, I'm leaving. What do you put the odds at? I mean, first of all, you know, the administration has not really targeted the 14% of undocumented workers who are they haven't specifically targeted the 14% of workers who are the worst of the worst, the people who've committed crimes. They've gone after pretty much anyone who's like randomly taupe. Before the show, you said that Trump's lost you on immigration. Do you want to elaborate?
I want mass deportations, not mass incarcerations. There's a difference. One is keeping a promise. You're here illegally, you get to go back home and help make the place from which you came a better place. That's not what Trump is doing. What he is doing is that he is expanding the power of the executive. We already have an imperial presidency. It's getting worse. and building these massive prisons. And before we talked about this with ICE, I support ICE's mission when it comes to deportation. You got to enforce immigration law, but that doesn't mean that you're an army, that you're able to just to go and just do whatever the hell it is that you want to do. Especially if you're so much of a coward that you got to cover your mask. I'm unmasked right here. You see who I am.
Right. No, I mean, and by the way, I just wonder, if there's any actual law enforcement officers watching, and I'm sure there are, past, present, and future, or people who've served in the U.S. military. I know there are. I mean, does ICE, my question for you guys would be, and please, put this in the comments. Do you feel like ICE has a special need to be protected from doxing by being masked more than a local police officer, a state trooper, an FBI agent, ATF agent, DEA, any of these other people who are all unmasked? I mean, I would think that was ridiculous. I mean, judges have been shot in their own homes. They're not masked. You take a chance when you come up here and you express a political opinion that some people might not like. You take your chances, and obviously, nothing bad should happen to you as a result of you just doing your job, but it could. And, it's like if you're running around dressed like that, everyone's going to view you as a terrorizing goon. And you could say, I'm not, but you are.
No, I get it. And there's a couple of questions here, which I think that need to be, should be answered. Like Star Runner 2020 said, how do you have mass deportations without having a place to hold them? Well, fine. You round them up. You hold them for a week. You stick them on a plane, send back to where they came from. Goodbye. Go with God. I mean, that's what you do. And the way that I would do this personally, if I was president, is it'd be under my purview, is that the immigration law that I would use to enforce you would be the immigration law of the country from which you came. For example, illegal immigration to Mexico is a felony. Here's a misdemeanor. You're Mexican. I would hold you under the standard that Mexico holds illegals to go into its country. And I would send you home. You don't need to hold someone for 9 months or for a year. That's insane.
Well, I mean, one thing I don't even understand is, look, there's a lot of ways to handle this that don't involve pouring money into the prison industrial complex that you alluded to, Robbie. Right. I mean, basically, we live in a surveillance state. Yeah. We know where people live. We know what cars they drive. We know what faces they have because it's all in a national database. If they want to apprehend someone and say, we're going to deport you, wouldn't the smart method simply be, seriously, for a minimum, to make things easier on everyone, including the deportees who've been here in many cases for years? Why not just say, drive up, knock on the door, don't be all terror-y, and just say, listen, 6 months from now, you've got to be gone. Your deportation date is so-and-so. If you have a reason that you need to go to court and prove that you need to stay longer, go with God and bring your case. But we're going to slap an ankle bracelet on you. We know where you are. You can run, but you can't hide. And if you're not on the plane within 6 months, we will come and we'll forcibly eject you. Why not just do it that way?
Well, you could, but that's not, but this is all a show.
It's state terror is what it is.
Well, it is. And the thing is, I've made this illustration before. This is kind of like, Augustus after the Roman Civil War. The Republic was dead, but he kept the trappings of it to keep the Roman population believing the lie. Yeah. It's not elections. It's not consuls. Did all the things. They went through the motions. Didn't mean anything. That's where we are right now. And I think that what this is that this is a horse and pony show to try and convince people that voting still matters. I'll tell you right now, it doesn't. If you think that our elected officials run our government, you're not paying attention. We're controlled by an oligarchy that we don't get to see. And that's what this is. They're just trying to hold this illusion together just a little bit longer.
Robbie, let me just run through a few little housekeeping things. First of all, sure. If you're just joining us, Robbie's sitting in for John Kiriakou, who's in a car on the way from the DC airport to his home, where he's going to be joining us sooner rather than later, probably around half past, but I'm not sure exactly. Everything depends on the traffic gods. Also, TMI show coming up at 10 a.m. Eastern with me and Manila Chan. At 11 a.m., it's Thursday, which means it's the DMZ America podcast with me and Scott Stantis. Guest is Mike Lukovich, the two-time winning editorial cartoonist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Not a guy you see in interviews a lot anymore, but he's very good and very entertaining and interesting. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. And getting to a couple of just quick comments. Have I, Finn the Dober Collie is asking if I ever have heard of or read Private Eye, the UK-based satirical cartoon and news fortnightly magazine. Yeah, I have. It's very similar to something called Le Canard Enchaîné in France, or also Charlie Hebdo, which everyone's familiar with. It's very English, obviously, as you'd expect. I love it. I mean, you know, I would love to go and work there. And maybe in exile, I'll show up in London and be like, hey, guys, I could speak the king's English. No, I couldn't. But anyway, I could maybe draw the king's English. I have heard of it. Thank you very much. Also, $1.99 to Thiz Marley for that donation. Much appreciated. Robbie, do we have any ads?
We do. Hold on just one second. I'll throw it up for you.
Okay, cool. Thank you. While you're doing that, I'll look at a few of the comments that you posted up. Costa Rica has excellent dentists. My girlfriend goes there for dental implants. Pays less for airfare, hotel, and dental work than just having dental work done up here. Yeah, and it's basically like getting a free vacation, medical tourism. Here's our ads. I think people probably know when it's coming. Here we go. Still haven't tried 1775 coffee? Now's your shot. The 1775 starter kit dropped just only 1,000 units. You're getting the bold dark roast that hits hard, the smooth medium roast, and the vitality mushroom coffee for clean energy and laser focus. No crash. All single origin, small batch, toxin-free and mold-free. Plus, you're also getting a gold spoon clip because freedom is not scooped with plastic. A frother strong enough to stir up your coffee and your mother-in-law's opinions, and a black 1775 tumbler. $170 worth of coffee and gear. Yours for merely $99. This is for the ones who've been watching 1775 blow up on Rumble, wondering if it's actually worth it. Spoiler, it is. Go to 1775coffee.com/studio and grab your starter kit before they're gone. Bold beans, clean fuels, and a morning routine that stands for something just like Rumble does. Okay. The other thing I want to ask you before we move on, Robbie, this ICE gulag story is there's a lot of community opposition that's come, as the New York Times is reporting, to these warehouses, which are appearing mostly because any place where you need big warehouses tend to be in states that are less populous because it's cheaper. And that means you're probably in a red state. A lot of the opposition is Republican. It's pro-Trump, pro-deportation. But people are like, by all means, deport people. Just don't warehouse them in my backyard. My favorite was the quote from the mom who had a three-year-old and said she didn't want to see her three-year-old to see people in shackles if there was a detention facility nearby. I mean, you know, if you're into shackling and deporting illegal immigrants, should you really avert your children's eyes from it? It's kind of like if you eat meat, you should be willing to look at slaughterhouse videos.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just peak hypocrisy on her part. It's just like, me personally, I have no problem with, for example, I eat a lot of meat. You've been here. My son has worked on a ranch. He knows where meat comes from. He knows what the process is. And if you voted for a guy, and for the record, I did not vote for Trump. I voted for Dr. Shiva. It's probably the only person in Montana who did. And my wife just says, he voted for Trump. I did not. She's just over here trolling me.
While you're on the air.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's just Pete Kizzy right there. But I mean, to your point, if you eat meat, you need to know where it comes from. Just grew up on your plate. If you support deportations, then you have to understand that government is police, government is authority, government is force. And if you defy government authority, there's typically a price that's going to be paid. And it's just a matter of how it's done. I support deportations. I want hundreds of thousands of them, but I want it to be done in the right way. And Trump is doing this in a way that enriches his donors and enriches the prison complex.
That's what everything he does is about. I mean, we're not even going to talk about this Bitcoin thing that's going on with his family and Don Jr. and Eric. But so, by the way, thank you very much for an extremely generous donation from Dinky33, who just gifted us 1,800 dirhams, which are the United Arab Emirates currency. And that works out to, back of the envelope, about 400 and some dollars. So thank you so much for that. It's incredibly nice. All right. So as we wait for John to arrive from the airport, let's continue here with some of the comments. And then we'll okay, question for you, Robbie, from John D. Cockefeller. Do you play Arma Reforger? If not, join us on the USSR team.
I do not, but it is a game that I am looking at picking up. And when I do, I will 100% Putinbot Gaming, yours truly, will join you happily and lead the charge across the bloodstained battlefield of pixels. Let's do it.
Pink Lady Apples is asking for me, Teddy Bear, did you see the bizarre RFK and Kid Rock Make America Healthy Again videos? So strange. I did. You know, it's funny to me that Kid Rock is still a hero of the right. Years after Mike Judge's episode one, season one of Silicon Valley, which is a great show, shows Kid Rock as a joke. I mean, it's been 20 years or something like that since that show came out. And he was already back then considered a joke. I mean, I just think he's musically untalented. But, you know, yeah, I saw the video. The thing is, I agree with RFK on the whole protein thing and on the no preservatives thing. And I mean, I'm living proof of it. When you start eating natural food with fewer preservatives, you lose weight. You just do, because preservatives make you bloated and they make you put on weight. I mean, it's not that, I mean, I know most Americans I know who are overweight are not like chowing down a gallon of ice cream every night. They're hardly eating anything. And like they look at food and they get fat.
Our food is poison. That's why our food is poison.
Yeah, for sure. So let's see what else we got. If you think social media is addictive, you should see how addictive 1775 coffee is. Yeah, but coffee, it looks like, probably prevents you from getting Alzheimer's. So, you know, think about that. Frasmatas, comment for both you and I, Robbie. I've been trying to tell people that right-wingers in Germany, often Russia-aligned, no Antifa-styled groups will kill them in their homes. This isn't new. Yeah, well, the thing is, their Antifa isn't our Antifa, right? Like, Europeans don't play. Europeans are real. When they bring it in a serious way. John, I see you trying to come into the room, but your device is not connected. So maybe hit refresh or something. I'm just not able to add you yet. Okay, there you are.
Sorry. John, I look like hell. I admit it. I look like hell. I can't help it, though. I made it.
Well,
good to see you guys.
Welcome. I'm glad you're shaken, not stirred after international travel, which
I can't sleep on planes.
Me neither.
And the flight was 15 and a half hours long. I watched 7 movies.
A lot of movies. I was just going to say that.
I can't even name them.
Yeah. Is there even one that you remember?
Yeah, I remember watching F1. Oh, and I only watched F1. Extraordinarily predictable.
Racing one, right?
Yeah, racing. The only reason I watched F1 was because it was the only movie that's been nominated for a SAG award that I haven't watched, and I have to vote by next week. And so just to make sure I give everybody a fair shake, because I'm taking this voting thing very seriously.
Yeah, you're the only one, as far as I know.
I know. Everybody else just blows it off and votes for their friends.
Yeah, exactly. I hate that. Well,
but you know, I've watched every movie, and there were at least 3 that I thought, shame on them for even being nominated. These movies are terrible.
Well, John, I mean, it's funny that you should. I just had this conversation recently with a few people. It feels like since 2018 or so, it's a little bit pre-pandemic.
Yes.
It feels like Hollywood has forgotten how to make movies.
Ted, well, we should say, you and I have talked about this privately.
Yeah.
COVID, like, did something where it made everybody in Hollywood turn stupid.
Yeah.
Because they're just unable to make a decent movie. There have been a couple of exceptions. I told you that Bugonia was absolutely freaking brilliant.
Companion is my favorite recent movie.
Terrific movie. And Frankenstein, oh my God. I almost didn't want to watch it because I was like, oh my God, not another Frankenstein remake. And Guillermo del Toro is a genius. And
the
then
thing about, the pretty thing about much Frankenstein, though, is like, it's like Wuthering Heights. How many times does the same story have to be told?
Yeah.
It's already been told. Those have both been told well.
And this one should have been named something else, and they should have said based on the book Frankenstein.
Oh, because it's not really a straight retelling?
No. No, okay. It's not, which makes it that much better.
Oh, okay. Mary Shelley's loved not it. Spinning in her grave.
No, no. I think she would have loved it.
Well, quick question for Robbie, and then we'll get you up to date, John. So, Robbie, what do you make of the, and you, obviously, John, you too, what do you make of the further DART occult connections shown by the Epstein emails from Desert Fox? All this conversation about the temple, the Moloch temple, which I've now dived into. But anyway, go ahead.
Hey, Robbie got me going on this too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just shows just how satanic so many people in our government are. Honest to God, there's no greater power that a human being can have than to kill another person. There's no higher power that you have. And the fact that these people get off on pain and get off on death and get off on humiliation and just domination, it's satanic. I firmly believe this is a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual battle. And the sooner people wake up to that fact, the easier it's going to be able to realize this, why our government is so dysfunctional.
I mean, so here's the thing. I looked into the Moloch temple thing. I will admit that the architecture of that little off building at Epstein's little island is weird. I mean, it is unusual. It is not Bahamian. It really doesn't go with the building by itself. But there's really no evidence that it's anything other than a strange looking building. I mean, that there's no one who's gone on record as saying, you know, this was used for sacrifices, this was satanic. I mean you can build a building and be like, I just want something weird and exotic and just make it and build it on your property. That doesn't mean anything, right? I mean, it might mean something, but it doesn't inherently mean anything.
I don't know, Ted. I mean, do you honestly think that someone has been involved there? Like, keep in mind, we still don't have a client list. We still don't know who all was there. So let's just assume, for example, that the government, that the president of the United States, the Department of Justice, and all these people are lying to protect you. That you're going to say, oh, no, it really happened. This is what was happening. Or would you just keep your face shut? The people that you're looking for confirmation are the people who were involved.
All right. Well, Robbie, with that, I'm putting you backstage, if that's okay. Even if it's not okay, I'm putting you backstage. Okay, there it is. Okay, so John, obviously, I know you were on your phone on the plane. And
I was.
And here, so you know about the arrest of former Prince Andrew.
I'm thrilled over this.
We talked about the Zuckerberg. We're going to talk about Zuckerberg. Robbie and I have already kind of digested the, unless you want to add anything to the ICE gulags, community opposition. We'll be talking, we still have South Korea, billionaire tax, and Quentin Durant to talk about if we want to. So, all right, I guess we should talk about Prince Andrew, right? So now known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. So this does seem like the cracking of an egg. This seems like the beginning of something, right? Like basically, he's now been arrested for showing and giving classified UK documents to Epstein. What is it with people who do this, right?
Look,
I looked at classified stuff.
Isn't this exciting? And you know, the funny thing too, well, I'm going to blow my own horn on the one hand. I'll say that in a second. But the funny thing is too, is why? Oh, I think I'm double. Yeah,
I'm going to just take you out there.
Thanks.
Okay.
So on the one hand, why would Epstein care about British trade information? That doesn't make any sense to me. On the other hand, This is exactly what an Israeli access agent would do. It's exactly what he would do. Just bring in anything he can, because this is something called operational testing.
Well, it could be insider information, and that
it was
Epstein's holdings.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes. So in a way, this could have been operational testing too. If Epstein says, "Hey, listen, you know, it would really help me out a lot if you could get me what the next, you know, round of trade negotiating positions is going to be." And then you sort of bump it up from there. If he comes through with that, you give him something that's a little tougher, and then you move him into defense. They're investigating Lord Mandelson now, the former Lord Mandelson, Peter Mandelson, right now for the same thing. He'll likely be arrested in the coming couple of weeks on a charge of providing Epstein with classified defense ministry information.
Would Andrew be someone they would want to try, that MI5, I guess it would be in this case, would want to flip? Or is he a big fish?
That's a good question. That's a good question. They probably wouldn't have had the guts to try to flip him, or they would have been afraid of the Israelis, or the royal family wouldn't have permitted it.
Well, the King Charles III, has said that he was willing to provide a statement and to basically be deposed or questioned, I guess, maybe more to the point, about what he knows about all this. So it sounds like he's cooperating with the inquiry. I've got to think there's more coming, and I think it's going to ripple across the Atlantic, and I think this is just the very
beginning. But this is a lesson for the Americans, because we're like, oh, we really wish we could arrest somebody, but the statute of limitations is expired, so everybody's off scot-free. In the meantime, a couple of congressional committee chairmen want Andrew to come to the United States and be deposed. There was a conversation on BBC that I watched last night where the Brits were seeking American assurances that Andrew wouldn't be arrested if he were to arrive at JFK or at Dulles to testify on Capitol Hill. Well, the reason why they wanted the assurances was because they wanted to arrest him.
Would he voluntarily testify? He doesn't have to.
Does not have to.
He's so not
that's
an American.
They were asking him. They didn't issue a subpoena. They just simply sent a letter to the British embassy asking for it to be passed to Andrew, saying, "We would like for you to come and testify. We will offer you transactional immunity." And then they said, "Well, besides the immunity, we want you to promise that he won't be arrested when he arrives." And then they grabbed him.
Do you think the Brits would have shared, given how close the relationship is, the Brits would have shared their intent with their American counterparts to say,
"Yes,
we're going to arrest him"? So
I do. Off. I think they told the FBI, and that's why we haven't heard anything from the FBI about Andrew. Nothing. Only from Capitol Hill, and they would not have access to the information.
So is there a statute of limitations in Britain over the mishandling of classified information? Is this like going after Capone on taxes? Basically,
yes.
We know he was like raping little children, but can't get him on that.
That is good. Yeah, it's like going after Capone.
And my other take on this is, once you have the investigation, once you've arrested him, once you have now you have a case, you've got discovery, you've got everything, and you're going to find out all the rest. Every time Prince Andrew has double parked or done anything, you know, not put enough postage on his letters, they're going to know about and they're going to find out.
It's true. And then the question is, do they prosecute the other cases that they're able to develop from whatever they find in discovery? And then the real question is, do you send the former, you know, second in line? At one time, he was second in line to the throne. To prison? I mean, British prisons are notorious. They're worse than American prisons. And they have this unusual rule in British
prisons.
Assange
was very sick, right?
Was very sick. There was real worry that he would lose his life. But they have this weird rule in the UK. A BBC reporter asked me about it, if we had anything similar in the United States. And I said, no. Everybody starts off in maximum security. And you have to do a phase of your sentence in maximum, then you go to medium, then you go to low, and then you go to house arrest. So if you're in for 10 years, you do 2.5, 2.5, 2.5, 2.5. If you're in for 6 months, you know, you do a month and a half, month and a half, et cetera. Is he going to end up in Belmarsh?
It's possible.
It's
right?
Absolutely possible.
Or could he be extradited to the United States?
Well, but remember, we have this statute of limitations.
Right. But what if they get him on something that there isn't? I mean, it's interesting to me, by the way, just parenthetically, that when New York, for example, had opened that 1 year window for civil claims against, people like that.
Yes.
Nothing happened to Andrew.
No.
And, you know, Epstein spent a lot of time in Manhattan.
Yes.
So I'm sure some of these shenanigans happened here. I know at least one of those photos. By the way, I wanted to point, let you know that some UAE dirhams have been pouring in from Dinky 33 earlier in the show.
Thank
184 of them just arrived.
Oh my gosh, so thank
about,
you.
We're looking thank at about you. $500 US dollars this morning alone.
Yeah.
So thank you, Dinky 33.
Thank you, Dinky 33. I'll tell you, I've been in Dubai for the past week. First of all, Dubai is one of the most fabulous places on earth. But secondly, Emirati people are just so genuinely kind and warm. I honestly did not want to leave. I really didn't want to leave. Like, I was actually depressed sitting at the airport last night in the biggest and most fabulous business class lounge in the world.
I always feel, I seriously rarely am like happy to return from international travel to the United States.
Yeah, I agree. I love travel, but I don't love America. I especially love the Gulf. Oh my God, I just love it.
I think I like the rest of the world more.
I'm very proud to say that I'm going to go to the Gulf again a lot in the next 9 months. It's going to be awesome.
That'll be fun. Hey, quick question from Young Courthouse. And thanks for the $2. Have the three of us, and I'll put Robbie on here, watched the Before trilogy? That's the Before Sunrise, et cetera, et cetera. I've watched them.
No, I don't know it.
It's Julie Ducey and Johnny Depp. Not Johnny Depp, Ethan Hawke. And basically, it's Richard Linklater, the director from Texas, who basically did all three of them. They're very talky. Basically, it's an American dude who meets a French girl in Paris. They fall in love. Basically, it's one wild night, and they basically talk about where life is going. What's interesting is that they're both kind of shallow and not very likable, which was part of Richard Linklater's exercise to see if we could care about the relationship between two people who aren't that great. And then the second one, he has written a book about his experience. He's at a book signing in Paris. She shows up, and I love the ending of this. He has to get back to his wife. He has a bad marriage. He has to get back to his wife stateside. He has a flight to catch. She invites him back to her apartment. And it's like, it's 5 o'clock. He has to get going. And you can tell he's just not going to get off the sofa. And the movie ends. And then in the third one, they did get together. And it ended up being a shit show. So anyway. Oh,
that sounds great.
It's great. It's very talky, though.
The wife of a friend of mine is one of my closest friends. She's a 7-time Emmy winner. She was the director of the Ellen DeGeneres show. And when the Ellen show ended, she went into directing television series episodes and little indie films. And she did a film that was so great. It was the best ending I've ever seen. It was this woman who had this crush on a guy. They're both in their late 20s. She has this overwhelming crush on the guy, and she's doing everything to sort of get into his orbit. And the whole movie is her just trying to get close to him. Finally, he asks her out. They sleep together. And then afterwards, she gets out of bed and she goes to the bathroom. And while she's washing her hands, just out of, you know, sheer curiosity, she opens the medicine cabinet and there's a half-used tube of hemorrhoid cream in there. And the look on her face, this is how the movie ends. The look on her face, like, oh, fuck, he's human.
Right.
Like, oh, he's great. Not so great after all. He's got hemorrhoids. It was brilliant. I couldn't believe it. Like, how come I can't be creative?
I can't
like
resist
that?
Pointing out the fact that that's a strange coincidence that you mentioned that, because I'm literally going to see a hemorrhoid doctor today for the first time in my life.
It's been 20 years since I had the surgery. It's awful. Yeah, awful. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I've read online it's the most pain that a human body can experience.
Oh, the surgery?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I'll warn you now.
We'll see what happens. All right. Well, I've dealt with pain. Thank you, LA Times. Robbie, have you seen those movies?
No, I don't really watch very much TV. I spend my time reading books.
Okay, I'm taking you out then. All right. Okay, so let's see. Okay, so should we leave? Do we have anything? We have so much more to cover. Do we want to leave Prince Andrew where he is? We'll certainly be back to him.
Yeah, he's screwed.
Yeah, I would say so too.
And he did it all to himself. See, you know, this is the mindset with these people. They think that they're untouchable, and they're not. They're not untouchable.
Well, usually they are.
Well, usually, yeah. Okay, I stand corrected. Usually they are untouchable.
Okay, so Zuckerberg. Speaking of people who are normally untouchable. So he was dragged before on trial. So basically, the parents of this girl who, when she was 9 or 10 years old, got onto Instagram and basically spiraled out. Fortunately, she didn't take her own life, but she suffered from depression.
Yeah.
She was bullied by other kids, suicidal ideation. Her name is Kaylee, the trial name. That's not her real name. Mm-hmm. And she's now 20 years old, but because her name is being withheld because she was a child about when the events in question were brought to trial. Anyway, so her attorneys are one of 6,000 cases. This is the first one to come to trial. It's all being lumped together in a class action suit. And this is a big deal. This is like the new big tobacco. This is big tech. And basically, it's a product liability case. So normally, Facebook is protected by Section 230 of the Communications Act that basically says, we can't help what people do on our platform. We're not a publisher. We're like the phone company. Yeah. If you call up and make an obscene phone call to someone, that's on you. That's not on us. Well, but they're saying, look, the product was designed to be addictive and to bring in kids. They found a smoking gun memo where Zuck says, oh, officially no one's allowed to use Insta unless under the age of 13, but we're never going to get them hooked unless we have the tweens, the awful 10, 11, and 12 year olds.
Just awful.
If you're a parent or you care about kids or you've been a kid, it's not cool. And I don't think a jury is going to like it. And I don't know how much, look, I know how corrupt the Los Angeles Superior Court is. But I don't think that Zuck is going to be able to escape this. I think they're going to get nailed. I think big tech is going to have to fork out billions, if not trillions of dollars in the long run, the not so long run. I think this is a big deal, and it represents the next chapter.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I think you're right. And, you know, it's not an accident that the Europeans are so much tougher than we are and better at policing these gigantic social media platforms. They've gone after Twitter and X. Now they've gone again after Zuckerberg. This is not the first time he's had to face committees in Europe. They've been fined repeatedly. So I think we're going to see more of this. If the American government's not going to protect American children, the Europeans are going to protect European children.
Well, so the defense here is, like, kids are going to find a way, right? Like, they're going to say, are you 13 years old? Sure, I'm 13 years old. That's true. I mean, you know, I certainly remember, you know, I saw my first porn mag when I was 8. So I know exactly that that's true.
Yeah.
you know, you but is that a defense really?
No.
I mean, in I don't feel like it's a valid defense. It's
I
not
agree.
Gonna help.
I agree. Yeah. I don't think it is gonna help. But you know what's the what can the Europeans do other than levy fines? Like Zuckerberg's not gonna be prosecuted.
No, but this is Los Angeles, right? So this is a, I mean,
That's what I meant. I meant law enforcement, not the Europeans. Sorry, I'm tired.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, I mean, the thing is, this is a civil case, right?
So, yeah exactly.
I mean, so he's, so I mean, yeah, they can be shaken down for money. I mean, you know, with there's going to be, there are countless kids who've committed suicide. Countless kids who are, you know, in therapy. Adults who are former kids. I mean, Facebook's been around so long. They obviously don't care, right? I mean, I heard, you know, one of the parents complain, like, they just don't care. It's true. They don't care. They just want to make money. And I guess to me that the solution is here is to create a product. It's kind of like don't make you know, candy flavored cigarettes and then say you're surprised that kids are smoking.
That's right.
So it's kind of like, yes, you have to redesign the product entirely. Not just, you can't just sort of have a, you know, ask nicely for kids, yes, not to sign on.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, yeah.
We have to get our act together, like nationally on these issues.
No question. Okay, here we go. Let's do some more questions here. Would Charles dissolve Parliament over all this? He does have that royal prerogative.
Well, you know, that's a good question, and it's a more difficult question to answer than it might seem. The easy answer is probably no, but here's the issue. Mandelson, the former British ambassador to the United States, former, you know, business minister, former member of the House of Lords, we knew that Mandelson was close to Epstein. He lied to Keir Starmer about it, and Keir Starmer just bought the lie, hook, line, and sinker. And so the issue now is that British voters are asking Keir Starmer, what kind of judgment do you have? Everybody in the Western world knew this guy was a pedo. But just because he looked you in the eye and said, no, I'm not a pedo, you said, oh, okay, I'm going to make you a minister, and then I'm going to make you ambassador to the United States. And it was all a lie. So it's not necessarily that it would necessitate new elections, but I think it absolutely will necessitate an election inside the Labour Party to choose a new leader who would be prime minister and to throw out Keir Starmer, who frankly is as bad as, you know, Liz Truss and the head of Cabbage.
And is definitely on his way out.
He's out. Yeah, he's going to be
Jackson McGrath. John, do you think Epstein was a murderer?
That's a good question. I haven't seen any evidence yet that he may have been. Yeah, but, you know, people that are that deep in this kind of perversion, who knows?
No clue. Logger Jogger. John, I worked in the Gulf Coast refining chemical industry. The threat of terror attacks seems obvious, but it isn't really taken seriously.
Yeah.
Is economic terror not terrifying enough for terrorists?
You know, that's a great question. We used
there's
to talk
lots of holes, right? Like
huge,
there's like not just that, right? Trains.
Yes.
No one really, trains. There's no security on passenger trains.
Zero. What about reservoirs?
Right.
You know,
none.
Or dams. What about this shooting? It's been like 20, 25 years now where somebody or multiple people with high powered rifles shot up an electrical substation in San Jose, California. Major act of terrorism. They never could figure out who did it.
I think economic terror absolutely could be devastating if, you know, depending on the target, depending on the effect.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think that's right. And Gulf Coast oil refineries, you know, when I was living in Bahrain, there was always a fear of, you know, some skiff just kind of coming up onto the shore with assault rifles and explosives. And how do you combat something like that?
I mean, John, the truth is there isn't really that much terrorism internationally.
No, there isn't.
And I think, does it basically just boil down? I mean, to me, I assumed you'd know much more about this than I would. I assume that that's basically because most of the people who would like to blow up something American aren't in America, and it's hard to get here, much less like make anything happen.
Yeah, that, I think that's, it saved us more times than we could possibly know.
If we were like neighboring these countries, it would be, you know, geography is protecting us. Furfur, question for both of us. How did we deal with the heat in the Middle East in the summer?
I love it.
Oh,
I love it.
That's a big difference.
115 degrees and 80% humidity. I'm like, oh, bring it on. I love it.
I fucking hate it. If it's over 60 degrees, I'm sweating like a pig.
Oh, no. Listen, all the swimming pools when I was living in the Gulf, all the swimming pools had chillers, not heaters.
Love that.
In fact, I went into one pool in a housing complex in Bahrain. We were having dinner with friends, and they said, oh, let's go for a swim. And they didn't have a chiller, and the water was so hot. It was like an overly hot bath.
Yeah.
As soon as I jumped in, I had to get out.
No, I know about that. Like, yeah, and there's oceans that are like that. Like, I go to Martinique sometimes. And
yeah, the Gulf is like that.
It's too hot to swim.
It's too hot.
Yeah. No, I mean, the bottom line is, look, I'm just miserable. I find the air conditioning, and I try to stay out of the heat of the day. you know, that's it. I'm a total puss when it comes to that stuff. John. Have you hit the ski slopes in Dubai, or have you been on that crazy roller coaster?
I've been to the ski slope. It was part of a tour. An Emirati friend was taking us around. This is when they first opened, but I haven't skied down it. I'm not a good enough skier. I'm still kind of a beginner, but it's awfully impressive. And I'll say another thing too. I went to the Dubai Mall yesterday, and I haven't been to the Dubai Mall in quite some time. 2011 was the last time I went. One thing that Dubaians do that I really like is if something is a success, they'll just add on to it. So it was already the biggest mall in the world. Now it's like really the biggest mall in the world because they just keep adding to it. Yeah.
So excess. There's no such thing. It's like the old ad for MTV with David Bowie. Too much is never enough. Desert Fox, question for all three of us. What's our take on the mentioning of cloning designer babies and spare parts in the Epstein emails? As a Catholic, the soul being abused like this seems horrid.
Yeah. You know, this seems like eugenics to me. I think it is. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
I think he planned some kind of weird master race thing designed after himself.
Well, whether and with or without Epstein, we're that's the direction that we're moving.
Yeah.
We should ban that.
Yeah.
Well, agreed. I mean, I would say ban it until we have lots of time to study it. You know,
we don't have the right to play God. That's a bottle you never want to
open. I just don't think we should do anything radical without seriously contemplating all of the consequences, morally, ethically, and scientifically. But all right, taking that out. Okay, we got a quick comment. Any? What do you think about the South Korean president? That's a long prison sentence. Life in prison. Is he going to get out?
I'm shocked. You know, he'll probably get a pardon at some point.
I would think
that's what's happened in the past, but oh my God, listen, this was like 6 days of really bad decisions.
Yeah.
But nobody,
he's an asshole.
Nobody got killed and he's known as an asshole. So life. Wow.
Yeah.
Harsh.
Also let's talk about, Quentin Durant. We talked about that briefly on the show the other day. It's blowing up. It turns out that new video has been revealed by Le Canard Enchaîné, which is a very cool satirical newspaper in France that also happens to break some of the biggest scoops that in French politics. They got video that shows that basically this was a brawl between left wingers, young left and young right wingers, and that it tragically left this kid dead. I mean, this is, you know, people being really fucking stupid, and the right is trying to make it out like, to basically the far right is saying that La France Insoumise should have a cordon sanitaire, in other words, basically be sort of partly banned in French politics, not permitted to hold any seats in parliament.
Wow.
you know, but they're the majority party in the country. And it's so hilarious. It's not so long ago that Jordan Bardella's own right-wing party, the Rassemblement National, they were the ones being targeted for the same things. But the left never argued that they should be banned. The right's arguing that the left should be banned.
I'm going to draw a parallel. And I hope you haven't talked about it. The parallel is everybody wants a quick fix without thought to the fallout down the line. Donald Trump now is agitating for for the nuclear option in the Senate. And we talked about this yesterday.
Yeah.
I think John Thune's able to hold him off, but you know, you can't be in power forever. And when you give yourself or demand for yourself extraordinary authorities, those authorities are going to go to the people that you like the least eventually.
Always.
And then you're screwed.
True. I couldn't agree more. John, what's your favorite book? Toby wants to know. And thanks for the $3 Australian. Book? I could never answer a question like
that. No, that's a tough one. I'll say I'm partial, of course, to biographies. And How Can I Keep From Singing, which is the only biography that's been done of Pete Seeger. I couldn't put it down. In fact, I started researching. I wanted to write a biography of Pete. He was one of the most important people in my life, really, next to my dad and my grandfather. And then How Can I Keep From Singing came out, and I read it and just concluded, I can't possibly write a better book than this.
Oh, that's high praise. John D. Cockefeller, bigger mistake in history, China into the WTO or Russia barred from NATO at the end of the Cold War?
Ooh.
I have to go Russia barred from NATO.
I have to agree. Yeah.
I mean, China belonged in the WTO.
They did. They belonged in the WTO. But
and I think NATO shouldn't exist, but if you're going to have it.
Well, like the question we got yesterday, if Turkey and Israel start fighting, is that the end of NATO? Because
the more I think about it, yeah,
we're obligated to defend Turkey.
Yeah, so we lose no matter what.
Yeah,
it's just like, yeah, it's like game over, man.
Yep.
All right, I think we don't have time to talk about the billionaire tax in California. If we want to, we can discuss that tomorrow. John, welcome back stateside.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
Try to nap if you can, but not definitely. Don't nap too much. You know the drill. Anyway, we're here at 9 a.m. Monday through Friday. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. Stay tuned for the TMI show with me and Milochan coming up just in a minute. And at 11 a.m. Eastern time, an hour from now, please stay tuned for the DMZ America podcast with myself and Scott Stantis. We are we'll be joined by Mike Lukovich, the editorial cartoonist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, two-time Pulitzer winner. Very funny guy. So stay tuned for
that. Very cool.
Bye, John. See you tomorrow.